Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And I'm going to mix things up a little bit today because I want our guest today to introduce themselves. Hi.
Hi, I'm Kev. So some of you might know me as Kev Wiles. I've been in SEO too long to remember. Normally focus on tech and strategy, and probably known for my time at Halfords, where I led the search strategy for Halfords.com.
Right. So for the people watching and listening to this who doesn't really know your background or anything, could you give us like a bit of a whirlwind tour of where you started, when it was, how you got into the industry, and from there, your journey to now?
Yeah, for sure. So no surprise, I think every SEO has this answer, right? But like, I genuinely fell into SEO. So I originally left school, and went to college to do gaming development, decided gaming development wasn't for me, which is maybe in hindsight, the wrong choice. Got into web dev, did a couple of web dev projects for small SMEs, and then really just poked around the net a little bit in some forums, found that like SEO was this sort of like buzzword. Got into SEO probably like, I call it the heyday, but the days when you could put white text, white background, have your own link directory on your own website and rank for whatever you wanted, which was a pretty easy time. Then realized like, cool, we should probably take this seriously and semi do it properly. So got an agency job, which at the time was still pretty, I guess, new. Managed to land sort of a tech-ish job, and then worked way up from there, really. Like, worked across Nestle and Heineken for a couple of years on the agency accounts, and then went to McCann as a big agency, thinking, hey, big name, big CV, on CV, that's a cool thing. Didn't really enjoy it, so decided to go out one night, get very drunk, and book a one-way ticket to New Zealand. That was pretty much the crux of it. And then, flew out to New Zealand, ended up loving it, and ended up then working at iProspect in New Zealand for a year, across essentially their version of like what we call Argus they had over there. Came back and then pretty much fell into digital transformation at Halfords. That was, hey, we've got a 500,000 plus URL site because we've got a responsive and a dynamic and the desktop version of the website. We're moving to Salesforce. Not really sure what we're doing. Can you help? Hugely exciting project. And then stayed on from there, really, and then built a small team, got some agencies on board, and kind of then led search right up until the middle of the second pandemic, whenever that was, and then was like, hey, consultancy seems like the only thing I've not done that might be fun. Went consultancy thinking I'd have all this freedom to go travel the world and do all this cool stuff, and then reality is ended up sitting in the same office for the next couple of years, not really doing any traveling. And that's pretty much it. You know, within that time, I've been really lucky to work on some really some cool brands and some like really tough brands in the US, like some CBD stuff. But overall, just a mix of every type of site you could think of with their own complexities, which has been exciting and fun.
Brilliant. Would you say you're mission then is to find something that you can really be like an SEO nomad for a while and travel the world?
Yeah, I think so. I say this, I'm really lucky. I don't have any commitments apart from two cats, which I semi-treat like they're my kids. But I'm really lucky in this. It's like I don't have that commitment. And I do think that, like, you know, I've traveled before and I do think there's a lot to be said about getting out and exploring more. The difficulty you have, I think, is when you're consultancy, you still need to do that sort of like relationship management with clients, which makes it difficult to you know, fly to Bali for a month because the time difference just doesn't align with like US and UK, for example. But then on the flip side, I think the goal would be to build, I call them lifestyle businesses, but some own sites that you're building your own product and you're learning more about it. I've been following so Freddie and then I can't remember, I'm just going to call him the CarMats guy because I can't remember his name. But I've been following their journeys of them like going from like an agency owner or a freelancer to like a site owner. And I think that's, you know, at that point, you can test and learn as much as you want, because the only one that is accountable if it fails or succeeds is you. So you can be, let's go and build some dodgy links and see what happens. You can be a bit more risky and stuff. I quite like that idea of building like your own, well, putting your skill set to build your own thing. But with all those things, it's not then just about, hey, you need to know SEO, it's need, you need to know dev, distribution, like all the back end stuff. And that in itself is, go and find time to do that stuff while trying to grow a consultancy is almost impossible.
Yeah. So is it mainly on the technical side you work, or is it kind of broader than that?
Yeah, I always started as a tech person. I quite like sticking my headphones on and getting into code and stuff. I think Halfords was the pivotal change for that, just because I went on to lead search. So it meant that I had to come a bit more au fait with understanding like content strategy, content briefing, the keyword research more, digital PR, all that sort of stuff. But like, if someone was like, you can only, I still look at SEO in three disciplines like content, tech, and link building. If I had to pick one, it'd be like, cool, put me in tech because it's a bit more fun. The downside to that is like out of the box platforms and stuff, realistically, without much customization, aren't the worst things out of the box. Like, you can go and spin up a WordPress site, keep the theme pretty lightweight, and the tech issues won't be huge. And I think, you know, we're seeing that shift now with bigger brands moving to platforms like Shopify, which, you know, inherently do have tech issues, but some of the smaller things probably are less important or fixed out of the box. So it's nice to have that mix where you can get involved in broader strategy and stuff.
Right. So with your background working on lots of different sites, from massive sites to smaller sites, what would you say are the main sort of technical SEO issues that crop up time after time?
It's a good question. I think it generally, I'm going to say it, but I hate saying it, it does depend. And the reason I say that is like, I think if you're an SME, technical SEO really doesn't, from my own opinion, doesn't really play a huge impact in your ability to rank for certain things. Right? Like, if you're talking about, you're an individual plumber and you're trying to rank for like plumbing Stratford-upon-Avon, realistically, is Google going to put and downweight you massively for having two broken pages when your site's 20 pages in total? Versus I'm Halfords, I've got 500,000 pages and 10,000 are broken, that's probably a slightly different conversation. So I think it does depend on that sense. And the biggest things I see with e-com stuff is like allowing search filters and a facet navigation to be indexable and crawlable by Google, canonicals not set up correctly, or like hreflang just not working as it should. And those are the things that aren't easy to do out the box. So things like, a lot of the Shopify sites I'm working on at the moment is the hreflang doesn't work across all platforms because Shopify is not super good at doing that stuff. And not because it can't, but when you look at then how companies need to do that to do like Shopify markets or et cetera, it's not so easy to configure the output you need. And then I think when you start looking at like Shopify or Salesforce or any other platforms to do facet navigation, typically those are like a dev conversation like, yeah, we can do that. And then before you know it, you've got a indexable page that's like red plus blue plus green plus keyword indexable that no one in their right mind is ever searching, that now Google can go and find a couple of 100,000 additional pages, and they get stuck down this rabbit hole and you're suddenly scraping to be like, how do we reverse this because we've messed up?
Yeah. I'm going to say, from my own personal experience, is when it comes to e-com especially, it is that variance that people get so confused with. Well, do we canonicalize everything just in the main product page? But what happens if somebody's actually searching for a red dress in size 10 instead of whatever size, you know, instead of a blue one, in, you know, and all these different variations? And I think, it, like you said, rabbit hole. It creates so much confusion, especially with canonicalization, because some people over here and say, yes, canonicalize it to the main product page. Some people say, no, you need different URLs indexable for the different variations. And what's your personal overview on that?
I think it should start with keyword research, right? And then understanding, like, if we're talking about clothing, you know, what are the key variables that do have volume and then amend that sort of focus. I think, you know, if you're trying to get something really long tail, you could probably do that with just one indexable version of that page off a filter. The issue is, it's like you have to then look at how you break the filtering system essentially to be able to say, right, go and create a indexable filter for one color, but if it's two colors in that filter, don't create an indexable page because that's going to create confusion. And then not only that, but like, how do you do that to tie it back into UX, right? Because most e-com sites have like a radio button type filter that allow you to multi-select. So then it's like, well, that's not going to work because how are you going to do that? And that's usually JavaScript driven, and how they're going to find the page. And there's only a handful of sites I've seen recently that have done that pretty well, that can have that combi approach of like, you can still use radio buttons for the user experience, which is key, and have the sort of like URL in the code for Google to go off and crawl. But that's because most of those things aren't scoped out of the box from the platforms, right? There's just not, it's like, we have a really great filtering system, which is a dev has built and a sales team have built, but there's been no inherent consideration of like, how should we do this from an SEO point of view to make SEOs happy?
Yeah, I mean, e-com is a whole different ballgame. I remember I was probably one of the first few who downloaded Magento when it first came out. And back then, the alternatives were like Zencart and OS Commerce. You know, it just like from there. And suddenly you had this, oh, and everyone started to use it, then didn't understand the resource and the technicalities behind it and everything. So I think it's not just understanding SEO, it's understanding the bigger pictures.
Yeah. And I think you're right, because like, you know, a lot of the time, Shopify, like I said earlier, like the Shopify hreflang implementation isn't perfect, but the actual consideration, when I get asked, it's like, oh, should we go to Shopify Markets, et cetera, et cetera. The actual consideration is like, how do you set up that stuff? From a non-SEO point of view, you know, there's different tax laws in different states in the US and different distribution things. And how do you then actually get those tax rules to match back if you're running it from the UK for accounting purposes? None of that is an SEO conversation, but like inherently does impact how you then set it up for SEO. And I think that's somewhere where you've got different departments leading to do different things, but don't inherently know how like all those dots connect essentially to say, right, this is how it should work. But that's not, I don't think it's the worst thing. I think it's then back to that famous old, like, how do SEOs and devs work better to build a better product, which is then full circle of like, SEOs piss off devs because, hey, we ask for a million things, help to do stuff. Or, you know, you only have to see sometimes how tickets are being briefed into devs. I think a lot of, and it's not a negative about devs at all, are very much like, SEOs will go, we want this solution, and the devs will go and build that solution, but the SEO hasn't filled that middle bit of like, and we want it to be executed in this way to have this output for Google to read it this way, and then we moan when it's not done the right way, and it's like, well, we haven't given the dev the actual like power to understand how we want it to be executed. We've just said, build the solution, they're super clever, they've gone and built it, and then you're like, it doesn't work, and then that breaks the relationship down a little bit.
Yeah. So from your perspective, because you can see things from both sides, what is the role of a technical SEO?
I think it's that sort of gap between, I think there's quite a lot of things of, you know, if you're building a campaign landing page, like making sure Google can actually access it and not wrapping everything in like JavaScript, for example. And yes, Google's getting better. And yes, there's tools like pre-render, but like, just build it properly from day one and you don't have to have those considerations sort of thing. And I think the other thing is then being the middle ground between how to develop something and being able to work with the devs in sort of like their Jira or their sort of briefing platform to give them the details they need to execute in a way an SEO needs, rather than just being a content SEO person that says, I want to go and put this on the page and that happens and it's on every template and you only want it on one. I think tech SEOs also, particularly a lot of them that I know, are quite creative in being able to overcome restrictions to get that solution executed, which is a good thing because I think a lot of the time devs can just be very like, build the code, execute it, jobs are good, and then they can't really think outside of those parameters of like, hey, the platform can't do this, that's it, it can't do it, there's no way around it, rather than saying, hey, there's a more creative solution that you could use to get stuff done.
Yeah. So over the years, when you've worked on these more bigger brands, let's call them bigger brands, and you look at it, in your mind, you think, well, there's a million things we can do, but how do you personally prioritize things that will generate the biggest impact
Yeah. It's I mean, it's a good question. The famous SEO question, right? How do you prioritize properly? And I think from a tech point of view, it's difficult, right? Because like if it was content, you can put keywords, you can put some rough forecast together about what the SERP landscape looks like. I think for tech, I do think some of it comes down to experience, right? Once you've worked on a range of sites, you're able to see what's worked on previous sites versus other sites. But also I do think you get that understanding of like, what are the things that Google is actually getting frustrated about that website? So for example, like you've allowed the whole internal site search to be crawled, and then you've given it some directive about how to not crawl it, but you're still seeing that issue and it's like 20% of the site, whatever. You know, by doing that, you can then free up like resource and discoverability and stuff for the correct pages, which is inherently going to help those pages rank better because they're going to get crawled more often versus we've built the pagination in a way that's not user-friendly, which means Google can't see the products. Again, you're going to know that stuff, and that should be a high priority because it's like, hey, if Google can only see 10% of your product catalog, yes, those product searches might not have high volume, but those pages are the pages that actually are commercially driven, right? Like they're pages that if someone lands on that keyword, even if it has 5 searches a month, the likelihood is if your value proposition is correct, they'll convert. And I think that's where you can look at the site as a collective and say, right, that's a key thing. But I do think like we as SEOs get in some regard hung up too much on like Google said this, so we should scramble and go and change it. Like I remember, I think it was like a couple of years ago where Google announced their change in the pagination and they were like, we haven't followed their next and prev tags for ages. And suddenly like there's just an outburst of people being like, we should go and remove this. It's like, have you actually tested to see if any of the search engines are using it? And is there actually a different benefit to having it in the code? But then before you know it, like I still see today where like pagination is not done with the new guidelines, what Google said. And it's like, that doesn't help because there's no, from Google's point of view, I don't think there's a coherent, like, this is what you should focus on and this is what you should do. And you only have to go and look at Twitter and like some of the people on Twitter that talk about it. It's like one article about one thing will say one thing, and then Google's latest documentation will say a different thing. And then before you know it, you've got devs reading one thing, SEOs reading the other, you've got a conflict in approach which annoys devs, and then that relationship breaks down on prioritization. But I do think it comes down to like, you know, what's the impact level you think it's going to have, and then also get devs involved to say, how much of an actual heavy lift is this, right? Like we talk about site speed a lot, and SEOs will go, oh, you know, just go and look at the JavaScript and how that fires in and clean up the code. But like to a dev, that could be weeks and weeks and weeks of code refactoring. But an SEO has gone, oh yeah, it's Google says it's important, so we better go and do it. We're actually knowing if it takes 10 grand worth of dev time, are you actually going to see 10 grand plus in return from an SEO perspective? It's very much just like, oh yeah, Google said we should go and do it, so let's go away and do it.
Yeah. This is the fact. This is the thing. It's understanding the time and the investment that goes into it, because yep. You might have come across this scenario. I know thousands of others has, where, you know, the SEO team are just saying to the devs, well, you need to do this because in that tool it says this, so we need to fix it.
Yep.
You know, honestly, that's one of the most common things. But realistically, does fixing it help us to get from where we are now to where we need to be? And I think that's the missing gap.
Yeah, and you know, tools don't, in some regard, tools do and don't help, right? Like, you know, for the untrained SEO or the untrained business owner out there, when he sees like an Ahrefs order or a Yoast traffic light signal or any of the different tools, it's not just singling those guys out, but like, those things don't really help because it's like, hey, have you mentioned this keyword in the page title, meta description, URL, et cetera, and it's like a red, and it's like, yeah, but the user has gone and searched for a keyword that is, let's use mountain bikes as an example, but that is an independent retailer trying to rank for mountain bikes, which like when you then actually overlay how competitive the SERP is, the link data and all that other stuff, you're like, you as an independent bike retailer that sells 2 bikes in your local area is never going to go and rank for mountain bikes against the likes of Halfords and Evans Cycles and stuff. So that traffic light system is slightly skewed because it's saying, hey, it's not optimized for mountain bikes, but you'd be better off going after like mountain bikes plus your area or something more long tail where it's a bit niche specific. And that's the same with all tools, right? They give you that sort of like traffic light guided system. And then suddenly you're like, hey, there's 20 errors. And everyone in SEO probably gets the same emails of like, I've run your site through Hrefs or SEMrush or any of the other tools, and it's got this area and that error. But it's like, does it really matter? Like, in context of the site size and the complexity, does that individual error matter to go and fix it to see the benefit of SEO? And particularly on SMEs, I think you're better off focusing on content and good quality content and building some relevant links than you are spending all the time fixing 404s and 301s and fixing the pagination and the like all the other stuff that might exist, because you've got 20 pages.
Yeah. Something that's just sprung out in my head, well, you're laughing there, you look nervous, don't you? Do you remember when Google couldn't make the mind up about how long the meta description should be? Yep. Basically, you know, they said, oh, well, we've doubled the size of it now. And I know literally thousands of SEOs will have spent weeks and weeks updating the meta description, only then for, I can't remember the length of time, but they reverted back.
Yep, yep. And that's the thing, right? But then on the flip side of that, you've also then got them, you know, giving new recommendations on the length and then changing the SERP length for mobile and desktop. But then you've also got them updating documentation to say, well, I don't know what the latest stat is, but like 86% of the time we're going to rewrite it based on what we think is the relevancy of that page. And then you only have to go and look at the first page of Google on some of the search terms today where they've rewritten the meta description and it's complete garbage of what they've taken from the page. Like, I had it when I was looking the other week for something, it had ended up pulling through the alt tag of three images on the home page, separating them by a comma denominator, and then pulled in the price of the three products that were featured on the homepage as the meta description, and then a review that made absolutely no sense to what you were searching for. And then you look at, you're like, why on earth, how have you distinguished to say that in my mind is more relevant than the description that was provided based upon the term you searched? Like, that doesn't make sense. And I think then it becomes a, you know, don't go and spend days and days and days building meta descriptions manually. You know, look at the highest stuff that's driving the revenue into the site and then tailor those ones. But in reality, Google's just going to go, yeah, thanks for that, but I'm going to go and do what I want anyway, which is inherently what Google does most of the time.
Yeah, right. Marketplace, right? I'm thinking of a scenario here, a marketplace that, you know, has lots and lots of different vendors. Those vendors add their products to the marketplace with exactly the same images, titles, descriptions, everything that's on the website, right? How is the marketplace page meant to get ranked when it's basically a duplication of what they already have?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. And I think that is down to you as the SEO to work out, is there a different intent, right? Is it that, hey, on the website we're selling a new mountain bike, and on the marketplace we're selling the exact same mountain bike, but it's used or slightly used, that could be the variable that you use as a syntax to make the sort of like some core elements different. But ultimately, I don't think we'll ever get away from the fact lots of brands will use manufactured product descriptions because, hey, you're running 20,000 lines, product lines. Are you really going to go and sit there and recreate all those product descriptions manually? And if you're not, and you're using someone like in the merchandising team, are they best placed to write that content based on them not having SEO knowledge and keyword research knowledge that is then just them, for a better sense of words, just waffling about the product that they think is the best approach? And I think that that's one of the genuine ways I think things like, you know, AI can genuinely help, is doing the research to build variables and stuff into the product description and giving you a better output than a user could do, where it's taking things like the brand, the product specification in terms of like if it's a mountain bike, the gear ratio, the height, the colors it's available in, like et cetera, et cetera. But then it should still go through that manual process, right? Because at that point, unless you start getting really, really clever and uploading brand guidelines and tone of voice and all that sort of stuff, there's still that error of like, is it copied or semi-copied from another retailer that any AI tool has potentially looked at? But that's how I would approach it, is like, is it new or is it used? And are those variables the same with, like, you know, Auto Trader has the new side and the used side. those are the variables that they use to attribute that stuff. And then you pull in location and all that sort of stuff. But on a marketplace, it's a completely different approach to like a small business, right? Because it's like automation, dynamic variables, attributes. Like no one wants to sit there and do all that stuff manually. So then it's about scale and tools and processes and stuff.
Yeah. So how important is it that there's a differentiator, it is unique, it's not just copied from the original supplier site?
Yeah. And I think that comes down to then other metrics, right? So then it's like, cool, do you have, if you're actually trying to put effort into rank for those terms, what's then your link profile versus the next competitors using the same thing or the manufacturer? But also just from a non-SEO point of view, from a brand and a UX and stuff, you'd want to tailor that stuff anyway to own the content and own the narrative that you're speaking about. I think when you're talking about marketplace sites and at scale, and you could have 20 products essentially that someone has listed and they're exactly the same, I think it then becomes important because it's like, well, which one do you want to rank? But then the other part to that is like, what type of marketplace are we talking about? Are we talking about one that's got a sort of auction type scenario where those pages are going to come and go anyway? So am I that bothered about them being unique and written by hand if they're only going to stay online for 7 days? And at that point, it's then, should you, for your most relevant categories, build static pages that talk about the product in as much detail with unique content and then pull in the auction listings or marketplace listings onto that variable? It's the same with tires, for example. You can have a tire make, model, and size, and then you can have it in like 20 or 30 different variants, right? Like 225 R18, 225 R17, etc. The only difference there is the R17, R18, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the tire is made out of rubber. It's made out by one manufacturer. So at that point, it's like, are you better off having one tire page for that individual model of tire and then having sort of like a filtered type system that uses like a hash element or a parameter element that allows the user to view that individual size? Because at that point, is it really relevant to Google to give them 20 versions of the same page with 2 digits changed on the page title and meta description? Probably not.
Yeah, I think the tire example there, I can relate, because in a previous life I was a qualified mechanic. So, I have been into Halfords once or twice in my past. So I can relate to that scenario there. And I think that it is ultimately taking a step back, I think, and looking at what we have and what we're trying to achieve on these pages. It's not a case of, well, duplicate content's bad. It's just really analysing what's important for, I don't like calling them users, the people. I think if SEO start thinking about them as people that's looking for a certain thing, I think rather than numbers and users, I think we can have more of a connection there.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, I will search differently to you for the exact same product, right? Whether it's, whatever that might be. But I think that's where SEO and UX and CRO collectively, and all the other channels, need to combine together as a collective channel and work on things together rather than separate. And I think that sometimes comes down to SEOs have got their own goal, PPC have got their own goal, CRO has got their own goal, UX has got their own goal, and then suddenly you're all conflicting for the exact same endpoint but doing it different ways. But you're right in the sense, like, what's easier for the user to check out and get the problem solved that they're searching for, and then retrospectively work backwards and solve that problem in as quickly as possible. It's the same when, the days of like, here's a recipe article and it's 3,000 words. Is that really best for the user when you've got your hands stuck in like flour making a cake with like eggs on the side and milk and stuff? Probably not, because now my screen's going dark and I've got to like try and get the iPad to come back on, and I've got like cake mixture over my hands. And hey, that's where video content is way better. But like, it took SEOs a while to go, video SEO is a thing, we should probably put some effort into doing that rather than just content.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, stripping it right back, you just need to be in the places your target audience are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the case of, oh, well, people are talking about YouTube SEO now, we should do that. People are talking about this, we should do that. Same with social media. There's so many people that spend hours and hours on social media on the wrong channel.
You know, and I
think it's just stripping it right back. And I do. I genuinely think it's that connection, that understanding.
Yeah. And it's we're seeing that shift, right? Like partly from Google right now, where they're trying to understand more about the type and the intent of that search, and then mapping back that, as horrible as some of those designs are that they've been releasing, that like, what does the first page of Google look like? And, you know, when I was at Halfords, for example, they used to get a ton of traffic for mountain bikes as a collective into that category page. About a year in, what we saw is Google had then suddenly, for some reason, just put map packs across every time you search mountain bikes. And like, the only thing we start to realize is like, maybe Google is understanding that's the type of query you want to go and find a specialist, or you want to go in store and be fitted, because it's one of those products that like, you do actually need a proper bike that is sized and fitted for you because of like health issues and all that sort of stuff. And therefore, like, to optimize for that, it's not then the PLP that we need to work on, it's then the store pages to make them more relevant against those queries. And then it's the Google map listings to make sure they mention those types of products, to make sure they feature. And then it's like map back to like, we need to build citations to that sort of stuff. And I think you're right. It's like, again, if it's from an e-com point of view, how do you start optimizing the product feed for those sort of queries? Or if it's video content, like what is the user actually wanting? And then try and build that in the best way to solve that problem. But I think there's a lot of stuff that's still like, 10 blue links is SEO, everything else is someone else.
Yeah. On that note, with 10 blue links, what's your views and experience with Google Shopping?
It's a good
it's
a good question. I don't think there's enough clarity right now. You know, they came out and were like, you know, you've got the organic product feed. I personally think it's one of those things they've done. Hey, there's an organic shopping feed. Isn't this great? And that doesn't sit with PPC. It sits with SEOs or whatever. But then they've not really given enough ability to be able to go and modify and work those two things together to get the best output. And I also don't think, you know, sometimes it's going to cause conflicts, right? Because the paid channels are going to be like, well, why would we want you to optimize our feed for SEO if, you know, that means we get less budget? Yeah, sure, they should be more efficient and they should do that stuff. But it's another thing I think that like will take time for SEOs to really put in their arsenal to say, like, this is a strategy we should be putting effort into to optimize those products. And I do think it's only going to get bigger, right? I think in the US, Brody Clark shared some really cool examples from the US up on LinkedIn the other day about Google testing certain things. I mean, it looks messy, but that's essentially, I guess, where Google's saying, hey, this is where we should go based upon the research we've done.
Yeah, I mean, where Google's heading, that's anyone's guess at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you ask 1,000 different SEOs and you get 1,000 answers because we just don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I think that's, until we do know, then there's no point worrying about it. I've always thought that there's things in your control and there's things out of your control. Yes, you want to be proactive, but focus on the things that's actually in your control and spend less time worrying about things that might happen.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's like, that's the thing where I think strategies for SEO get way more complex than they actually need to be. And I think that maps back to, you know, in Tom Critchlow's MBA thing that he released a couple of years ago. You know, a lot of the decks that I send him and wanted honest feedback on, he's like, that's not a strategy. It's just a load of tactics about what you should do to fix the site rather than a, what is the user doing and how do you get, you know, to your point, be where the user is. And that's where I think, like, has SEO really changed in like X amount of years, or are the fundamentals of what we should have been doing 10 years ago the same now, but just how we get to the input has changed, i.e., 10 years ago, we should have been writing content and good content, but we tried to bend the rules and put white text on a white background because we found the back door. Whereas now, you know, we found that, hey, we can scale content and do it through AI, and isn't that great? And there's lots of tools. We did the same with guest posting. We did the same with directories. And it's like, yes, Google's advancing, but they're advancing because inherently SEOs also find loopholes and ways to manipulate their search, which is kind of their own fault. But that as such really changed. Like, I personally don't think it's changed that much, which is, can Google access your website and crawl the right things as fast as possible? Are they targeting the right keywords? And do you have like buying guides and stuff explaining that in as much detail? And do you have publications like digital PR to support that stuff, right? Years and years ago, you would have done the same with links, but through traditional PR to get in a magazine, to get your brand noticed, to buy, to sell more products. Like, now it's just transitioned online because that's where the audience is.
Yeah. Now, I want to shift the conversation. Phew, he says. I want to shift the conversation to more yourself. So when you're working in agencies and working on all these big brands, what was the moment you thought, I'm going to go on my own now. I'm going to go, you know, freelance. I'm going to set my own consultancy up. What was the trigger moment in your mind?
I think being able to work on multiple projects and kind of stay at the edge of the forefront, because I think when you're, and it's not true of every business, but when you're in a much bigger business like Halfords, SEO isn't the biggest priority, right? Like, they have lots of garages, which therefore things like above the line advertising are more important than SEO and that sort of thing. And I think I got to the point where I wanted to still go and push the boundaries of SEO, doing and testing other things. And at the time, and still do, I live in the Midlands, so it's not exactly the digital hub of the UK, right? I live in Stratford-upon-Avon, so that's even smaller from a digital perspective. But I think at that point, I was like, it's either this or I move away. And at the time, we'd just come out of COVID, and I was like, don't want to do that right now in case we get a third lockdown. So that was the sort of key driver. And I think, you know, at the time, having worked agency side, some of those clients had now moved to different companies and were looking for SEO. So it kind of felt like the ideal time. But it's, you know, there's lots of people that say this. Consultancy is great, but also has other things that probably a lot of people don't realize, which is like, you're doing SEO, you're doing accountancy, you're doing admin, you're doing bookkeeping, you're doing all the other things that when you're in a business or an agency, you don't even get sight of because you don't need to, you're just an SEO. And that inherently creates some problems, right? Because you then need to learn about those things to understand them, to then be efficient with running the consultancy. And that's, I hate those things, right? Like, I hate sitting here and going, oh, it's a tax return and a VAT return. Isn't that fun? Like, let's not waste any more time doing that and get someone else to do it, sort of thing. But that's how I started. And it's fun, you know, you get to meet lots of different people, but inherently has different issues to what the issues were working in-house or working at an agency.
So you personally making that transition, what would you say has been your personal biggest challenge?
Work-life balance, I would say. I think you get so caught up in trying to deliver the best for every client and grow and keep at the forefront of everything and still run all the business and do all the back-end stuff that you quickly realize you lose a lot of your sort of like work-life balance, and you can't really switch off. And when you are on the sofa watching TV, you've got the laptop just replying to emails and Slack messages and Monday messages and Asana messages and Trello messages and Jira and everything else in between. And before you know it, you've not got that distinction of like, I'm at work, I'm not at work, and you get that downtime. And there's people probably better at it than others, but that's the thing that I really struggled with. And now I just sleep really early and get up even earlier and found that's the sweet spot. But yeah, I think that's the key thing. And also, like, depending how you're positioned to work consultancy, I think it can be like quote unquote a lonely space. Like, it's all great being on Twitter and some of the communities that exist, but like actually being in person, talking to people about SEO or just life in general, I think is a key thing. We're humans. I was really fortunate I got a desk in a co-working space to sort of like solve that problem. But for a period of time, it was basically me talking to my cats about SEO for them to basically look at me like I was absolutely nuts and not really care what I was talking about. And that's the other part you miss, right? And, you know, unless you've got friends that are in the same industry, people are like, oh, so you work on computers. It's like, well, not really. And then they call you like, can you fix my printer? I'm like, not really what I do, but sure, I'll have a look.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Definitely. But again, people who are in agency and they've never been on their own, they have this perception of things. But in reality, they just think, oh, well, you know, the agency is making all this money from the client. I'm doing all the work. If I just go on my own, I can make loads of money as well.
Yeah.
But obviously, yeah. Now, you know, we live in the real world. And reality is, you know, you can't bill 100% of your time because, you know, you need to spend unbillable hours doing the business things, generating the business, talking to clients, yep. And all these other things. And I think factoring, so as a percentage, what would you say you've managed to come up with as billable percentage?
I really hate saying it depends, but I think it does on the type of role or work that I'm taking on, right? Like if it's my own client and I'm doing end-to-end of everything, then it's much harder because it is your time spending that versus doing a piece that's a specific deliverable that is like a much, much less. I think that's, you hit really a key note. It is, you know, you're selling your time and you don't like what you may think like, hey, I want to work 40 hours a week doing SEO and that's all I've got to do. The reality is that when you go in consultancy, it's probably half of that you actually get to do SEO because you've got, to your point, you've got new business, you've got a network and you've got to go to events, you've got to go and meet clients, you've got to do reporting, you've got to do accounting. And then before you know it, half your week is gone before you've even actually touched a site to do SEO because you've had to do business stuff. And I think that's the key thing is you have to be prepared to either not want to grow it as fast as you think you can and make all this money to your point of like, I can make the same money as an agency and I can do a better service, or be prepared to build that team of freelancers and networking and then not have as a consultancy, have it as an agency. But they're very different models because then you've got the whole, you've got to deal with HR. And when those people have issues, you've got to like have that personality and that empathy to discuss those issues and work within the remits of like what the issue is. You know, it's tough. Some freelancers love it. Some don't. Some want to like, and I think people think consultancy is a lifestyle business. Like I definitely did. I was like, go consultancy. I go travel for a couple of years, do Bali, do Thailand, all that sort of stuff. And the reality is like, it can be done, but not if you really want to grow a consultancy to make it like really good money. It just isn't sustainable because if you're doing it yourself, which you should because it's a consultancy, you can't go and enjoy yourself and do all that stuff and work X amount of hours to deliver all the stuff clients want and stay up to date and understand their niche and their industry and their sector to understand the legalities and the complexities and deliver all that stuff at a really high level if you're off traveling and exploring 8 hours a day and enjoying yourself.
Yeah. I think this is the false perception. But in reality, unless you've actually gone through it, I don't think anyone will ever understand, no matter what anybody else tells them, no matter what books I've written, no matter what's going on, until they've been put in that position, they don't understand. Because I get approached by lots of people who's gone freelance and they think, oh, it's not what I expected.
Yep.
You know, and this is the reality.
You have to wear all those hats, right? You have to wear all those hats. And then you, like, you know, when you win clients, you have to work out like what's their client retention period, how long's the contract, and then how do you start drumming at new business, and is that through social, is it through networking, and if it's through social, like what do you actually post about that makes you different to like X, Y, and Z in the industry? And it then becomes like a, you know, not a sort of like scramble to price point, but like you are fighting with other people who have already got relationships with those clients or potential clients, and then you really need to like find out what makes you unique and what you enjoy doing. And you know, some people just enjoy doing the whole retainer and they enjoy doing all end to end and taking that bit. Some people enjoy, I'm just going to do auditing. You know, Aleda Solis has done incredibly well just on international SEO. But like, you have to get to that point and go through all those little nooks and crannies and all those little bits to go, I don't like that bit, so I'm going to do this bit. Like, I inherently hate writing content. So if someone's like, do you want to just write content? I'm like, I'm not the guy for you because you'd have to rewrite it yourself because I'm awful at it. But it's taken time to learn that stuff and go, actually, I'm going to say no to this stuff, even though it's revenue in the bank and the consultancy bottom line. It's not stuff that I get enjoyment out of, and I'm not going to deliver the best quality, so it's not worth me doing that stuff and sitting here going, oh, I wish I wasn't doing this.
Yeah, I do feel that, especially when I talk to some freelancers, I said, well, you need to be honest with me here. What are you not good at?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know,
and I think you're right, like, and it, but it comes back to, again, I think, an understanding, right? Like, you only have to go and look at, like, Indeed or LinkedIn jobs to see PPC and SEO jobs being combined into one. Like, we're looking for a PPC and SEO manager. It's like, can someone genuinely be really, really good at both of those things to give you the best value for money and the best return? Probably not. Like, sure, maybe they have a high level understanding, but if they've got to do all the doing, the execution, the strategy, the planning, and the bid optimization strategies and the amends in AdWords and then the SEO on a day-to-day basis, can they actually really stay up to date with everything in enough detail to do that stuff? Like, I would probably say no, having tried to do that at an agency. It's tough, right? Yeah, sure, you can do the base stuff, but like, if you actually want to be doing good stuff for clients, pick a discipline, do it really well, and focus on that. And there's lots of people, like, even when we're in tech SEO, right, there's people that have just honed in and owned Schema and done that to great success, and that's their thing. You know, Adam Gentz has decided to go down the route of building dev relationships and tech, and it's, again, it's worked really well because it's a need, but it takes time to get to that point. And I think the like OGs, if you like, and the older people in SEO have all gone through that pain and the awkward conversations and the battling of algorithm updates to go, I absolutely hate that stuff. Like, I don't want to do that again. And I remember we went through, as an agency that I used to work for, we went through a period of doing link building and then realized that we just weren't adding value because we were just building crap. We were just putting posts on blogs and saying, hey, this is great, aren't we doing really good work? And then it's like, well, it's not really anything. Like, I wouldn't go and shout out to my mom, like, oh, I've done this really cool thing. I'm like, I put a post on Pete's blog and I've got a link from it. Aren't I cool?
Yeah. It all comes back to, well, what we're doing that's generating impact, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that for me, when I've been talking to people, that's one of the hardest thing they find is, you know, what we're doing to create solid impact. And people don't understand, you know, I know a lot of people in this industry, and they haven't got to where they are just because they've written a couple of blog posts or, you know, been on one stage. You know, it's built on years and years of research into that one specific thing. I mean, there's certain people that's been talking about the same thing for 20 years, but it's only just now starting to become mainstream.
Yeah. And it's the same way of, like, I'm quite good friends with Barry Adams, like, we've caught up a few times, but, you know, started out of tech, and that's how I started reaching out to him to, like, ask for advice and tips, and he was always happy to help. But now, you know, Barry is known as the go-to for Google News, right? A real niche specific within a niche specific. And that, if you need Google News stuff, that's who you go to, right? Like, I had an issue the other week and I was like, well, I know who to go and speak to, and it's Barry. And within 5 minutes, he's like, yeah, this is the issue. And I'm like, that would have taken me hours to go and work out, because it's not something I do every day. It's not something that, like, I need to do every day. And it's, you know, it's the same with those things. But I think it doesn't help because there's not a clear structure of progression paths, right? Like, lots of agencies are like, we're hiring an SEO exec and you need to do keyword research, reporting, technical SEO, content management, content research, content MLOs, build backlink lists. And it's like, build specialists and you'll get better results, because then you've got a true specialist to go and do that. And when we started working with Nestle years and years ago, they actually said you have to have channel specific specialists within SEO, which is the clear distinction of how I then ended up going from a generic SEO exec to technical SEO exec to then tech SEO manager, because of that. They forced our hand to say, build those specific disciplines, otherwise we can't get you through procurement, because that's how we've structured it. And it worked well. You know, a tech person talking to a content person, not going to have a great conversation because techs are quite out there or quite shy and quite, you know, reserved, where content people are a bit more creative, can talk about the sort of like words on a page type thing. But that's where I think the relationship side comes into it more.
Yeah. Do you think then it's important for SEOs to specialize in a certain area of SEO to progress their career forward?
I think I think you need to have an understanding of how to do everything, or at least understand the basics of everything. So, like, you know, understand how to do keyword research properly, because it, again, it does impact from a tech point of view of like understanding the SERP and all that sort of stuff. But I do think the flip side is like, it's beneficial to then be, depending on your client size and the type of sites you're working on, because if you're working on WordPress sites, tech SEO, less important if they're 10 pages in this SMEs type thing. But I do think it's like, if you've honed in and really worked out where you want your career to go and you want to be a head of tech SEO at iProspect, for example, well, you're going to need to know a lot about tech and all the individual disciplines within tech. And again, back to that like PPC and SEO and combined thing, I don't think you can go and be really, really good at link building and all the types of link building and all the types of link cleanups and all the tools and content and tech, unless you're a superhero. And if you're a superhero, I'd love to know what you're taking so I can have some too.
On that note, is there anything you think the audience needs to know that we haven't already spoken about?
I think, you know, the if you're getting started in SEO or progressing or thinking like how to restructure your career and stuff, like the learning SEO.io thing, hope I'm announced right, that Aleda started is awesome for that clear segmentation of the types. And you can go in and get a flavor and stuff. But then also building, I think Tom Critchlow's got one. I think Chris Green published one of like the skills matrix thing to understand where you're lacking based on different things. And then just like, I think as SEOs, we're scared to ask for help because we're scared someone will out us on Twitter and be like, look at this idiot, blah, blah, blah. But I think like, if you're trying to progress your career and you're not sure, ask the people that have gone and done it. Like ask, you know, yourself or Barry Adams or Chris Green or, you know, Rand Fishkin or whoever those people are. And most of the time they'll get back to you with some good insights of like, hey, you want to follow my career steps? This is how I got to it. And this is what I progressed. And this is what I'm good at. That's how I approach it. For the older people and the OGs of SEO, there's no point me telling them anything that they don't already know.
But like anyone, no one gets to where they are by not making a few mistakes.
Yep. You know? Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, on that note, is what conversations would you like to have with people and where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm always, this year for me is about building, like I say, networks and relationships with people in SEO, right? I think just having those conversations, building that network for me is key this year. So you can find me on Twitter at just / or at Kev Wiles, or not Twitter anymore, it's X. And then obviously my own website, which is just kevwiles.co.uk. And there's no, I always try and help. And if I don't know the answer, I'll try and put you into an answer of someone who can help. So yeah, just that's the most I can give, I guess.
Okay. Well, many thanks for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me on board.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.